Begin transmission. Hello, everybody. It is Chris, aka Star Raptor, with the guys Milton and Ben for another episode of Outer Rim Transmission, your weekly Star Wars podcast. Friendly people across the United States get together to talk about the latest in Star Wars news, reviews, and everything else. And speaking of reviews, we're in Bad Batch season, everybody. So we're talking about Bad Batch season 3, episode 4, A Different Approach. And there's also not so good news to talk about. I hate to say this, Milton. I hate to say this, but EA has canceled another Star Wars game. So we're going to get into all that tonight and more. So expect a pretty spicy take from me on all this stuff, as I'm sure Milton as well. So how's it going, everybody? What's up, Ben?
Nothing much. Just glad to be on here talking Star Wars. It's always a great way to end the weekend, in my opinion, like a great way heading into the new week and stuff. And, you know, I had a good weekend, like we were talking a little pre-show. It's finally getting nice out around our areas, so you know, I was just outside most of today, so it was just a, you know, nice kind of little spring preview over here, and just really just having a nice weekend, and you know, got a few good workouts in, and you know, didn't have like a crazy weekend Star Wars. Actually, my biggest thing for my week this week, really, for my week in Star Wars, was just, let's see if you can see this. I actually got a Millennium Falcon iPhone case, and it's actually, like, the specs to the Falcon. Like, it's just, you know, it's like a diagram. It says, you know, it says, like, cargo bay, like, loading area, like, and it shows, like, the specs of, it's like the Falcon blueprint, basically. So, you know, this is my week in Star Wars, and it's nothing too crazy, but... You know, it's just a cool little accessory I found at just a, you know, just like a little, like a discount store actually around here. So it was exciting seeing that, because I just had like a generic just like black case on my phone. And now, you know, now I have the Falcon. So that was kind of like my weekend and, you know, a little bit of my weekend Star Wars over the past couple of days.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's you say it's something little, but it's those little nuanced things in your life that tell other Star Wars fans around you, like, hey, I'm a Star Wars fan, right? Like, there's been so many occurrences in my life where I have, like, a little Star Wars wallpaper, somebody notices, and then next thing you know, we're, like, good friends because they notice, like, there was a little Star Wars thing that we talk about this all the time, Milton, about, like, breaking the ice with Star Wars, and something as simple as a Millennium Falcon schematic phone case. Somebody sees that somewhere, I guarantee you'll probably get somebody that you didn't know that's a big Star Wars fan.
Well, the funny thing about that is actually, you know, like you said, with people noticing it, my grandma actually noticed it when we were over there visiting. She was like, hey, you little a-hole. She's like, why didn't you get me one of those cases? I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know you wanted one. So she noticed it right away because, you know, like I've said so many times on this podcast, my grandmother loves Star Wars, and she was just like shocked I didn't get her one of these iPhone cases.
Yeah, it's one thing I haven't gotten yet is a Star Wars phone case. Maybe one day. But yeah, it's all about representing the galaxy far, far away, somehow, some way, some shape or form. Milton, what's going on in your neck of the woods, man?
Nothing really. Just been laying low key, working. You know how it is, being an adult, unfortunately. But really nothing this week in Star Wars for me, honestly, now that I think about it. Like, I still sometimes catch myself, I mean, obviously watching Bad Batch, that's like the biggest thing in Star Wars this week, but I still listen to some of the books once in a while. I get little snippets. I try to learn different things about things that I don't know about. But, I mean, really nothing that stands out as I think about it. So.
Yeah, I think just to throw in there, I mean, one little thing, though, at least, kind of indirectly, like, your week in Star Wars, Milton, you might have not, like, thought of it. I guess it's, like, one thing I enjoy personally, you know, with us being friends and everything, I love just, like, you know, you and me when we send back all these funny, like, little Star Wars Instagram reels back and forth, because, you know, there's so many good ones, like, you know, so many funny, like, Star Wars, like, gym ones we send back and forth. And, you know, that's always kind of, like, a fun part of the week, I think, for, you know, us both, right. Really.
Yeah, I guess I don't really think about it that much. But, yeah, you're right. Just because, like, well, yeah, you sent me that one about, I think it was, I don't know if I said it, but it's one with Anakin Skywalker hating like some football team or something. I hate them or something. Yep. Like, oh, that's funny. But yeah. Or like when I send you guys videos like in the chat sometimes. Like those prison ones or whatnot. So yeah, mm-hmm. I got you.
Yeah, for my week at Star Wars, I'm going to have to go grab visual aid. I'll be right back. So if you guys want to chat real quick, I'll be back in like 30 seconds.
Nah, I got, because... Well, listen, well, when you walk away, let's just talk about, listen, before you, can we start off with the EA Sports or EA thing and you go walk away for a second?
While all right, yeah. I'll be right back.
So, and then Ben, you're probably going to have to correct me on this, but what game did they just recently cancel for EA?
Okay, so... For any of our listeners, and for you as well, Milton, basically EA canceled the Mandalorian first-person shooter game that was in development because, you know, that was the game. Right. It was set to be during, like, the Galactic Civil War, so, you know, basically the original trilogy, and you were going to be a Mandalorian. It wasn't confirmed whether it was Boba or Mando or a new character. Well, it came out via IGN that they are officially canceling that game. And, you know, they're going to focus on the Jedi franchise, which, you know, the Fallen Order franchise is so successful. But it's like, why can't you have two games? So that's kind of just like the table setter. And I'll, you know, you can give your thoughts on that, Milton, because I know you're really passionate about the games.
Yeah. So when I heard about this, because I was listening to, I think Star Wars Theory talked about it a little bit on his podcast. And obviously what you guys sent. And I was like, not surprised, because again, this has always been my issue with Star Wars video games since Disney took over. The lack of consistency and lack of follow through. I mean, I think the only game that has been consistent is the Jedi Fallen Order series. I mean, I'll give them props. The game's pretty damn good, both of them, from what I've heard and what I've seen. But for them to cancel this game, it's kind of another knife in the back, just like as you think of 1313. Everyone looked forward to that game. You know, everyone looked forward to the Mandalorian game. You know, even Star Wars with Eclipse at one point was supposed to be the next big Star Wars.
Well, we had the trailer for Eclipse.
Yeah, the trailer was amazing. And I remember even saying, okay, this is something different in Star Wars. It looks like it was maybe a different time. It was like way before like the originals and all that stuff like that. Yep. So I was looking forward to that. And it's like you have three games that was very much hyped up that we will never see the light of day. Eclipse, 1313, and now this Mando game. To me, something needs to change when it comes to who's in charge of gaming over at Lucasfilm/Disney. You know, I understand you want to focus on the Jedi series. However, that's fine. There's one more game in that trilogy. What's your plan next? Because at the end of the day, these new consoles are going to need content, and now you just told us a week or two ago that you're going to remaster some old games. Hell, we still haven't heard about the Knights of the Republic yet. I mean, what's going on with that?
There's been an update on that game, actually. Oh. It's funny you mentioned that.
Okay, fine.
Real quick, let me
I know that was kind of like, you know, go ahead. I'll say, I know that was kind of wonky in limbo. So
that
like,
is
right
the
now,
craziest story in gaming right now.
It's mind-boggling that you have easy money to give. Like, we're going to give you our money if you make these games. Like, so stop playing around. Get your shit together, Disney and Lucasfilm and EA Sport or EA, because we want to play these games. We want to. And here's the thing. They're all different types of Star Wars games. That's how you grow your brand. Like, give us what Milton, you promise these.
Oh, go on. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was
no,
going to say.
Wait, they promised us something different, and we're not getting it now.
Yeah, well, I was going to bounce off that point. Like, well, I mean, you know, you're always bringing up Milton specifically, you're always bringing up the variety of games because, you know, back in the day, it was like you said, it's building the brand because you have Pod Racer, you have Rogue Squadron, you have Shadows of the Empire, you have the Battlefront series, you have Kenobi, you have all these things, and they're all different styles of games, and now it's just kind of like... It's kind of like, what are we doing here? Are we only just lasering in on literally one game, like one game at a time? Like that's my issue with all of it. And
and here's the thing too, and I understand the argument by someone could say, well, Milton, you know, you always say have a plan, have one single direction. You're absolutely right. So if one brand of game at a time is what you're looking to do, fine. But be transparent about it. Don't overpromise us. And then all of a sudden, no, we're canceling that. Oh, don't show us a trailer. Oh no, we're canceling that. Oh, don't promote. We're going to remaster this particular beloved game in, you know, Knights of the Republic, and we're not releasing that. You know, well, like, come on. How many times did that happen? Now, thank God we're getting Battlefront, you know, remastered on these systems. That's great. However, now as I think about it, that's a perfect Band-Aid to give us before they drop the news of, hey, we're not going to be making this new game.
Well, here's the thing. Let me clear this up. Let me clear this up, because the Knights of the Republic thing I do want to address, because I feel like that was kind of swept under the rug real quick. No one really knows what's the story with that. So that game was originally going to be published by Sony, and then Sony kind of dropped the ball on it, and then this other really bad corporation called the Embracer Group. Embracer Group is this amalgamation that is in Europe that is just like taking control of like so many IP from across pop culture, including they own the rights now to Lord of the Rings. And who knows what they're going to be doing with that, but it's really kind of concerning. But the good thing was, okay, so this developer that's working on it right now, they actually just went independent from said really bad corporation, Embracer Group. So now KOTOR is with basically an indie developer at this point, since they broke away. And last I heard earlier the week is they are still working on KOTOR, and that's literally all they said about it. So the game is not dead. They're still working on it. And at least the good thing is it's not going to be under the guise of this corporation that might just willingly just throw it under the bus and be like, yeah, we're not gonna make this anymore. But you know, if they're independent, that means they probably won't have as much funding either to make the game, so who knows what's gonna happen. But at least now it might be kind of a good sign that they're not part of an Embracer Group anymore,
right? Well, and I understand that, and look, I'm not as you know, knowledged when it comes to these different companies like you are, Chris. I mean, and I think that's amazing. However, it's like you're Disney and Lucasfilm. You're telling me you don't have enough pull or influence or resources to find a company that can sit down, break down a beloved game and say, hey, this is what we need to do to make it compatible for all the new gens. And we know the fan base is there. We know they're going to want this game. What has been the issue? And I think we're not getting answers about that enough. What has been the issues to why these games aren't being successfully made that are promised to us?
Here's
like that's and it goes back to what I think Ben might have harped on this years ago about the movies. It's that Star Wars and Disney and Lucasfilm, they just are weird about being transparent with the fan base, and they want to be too cagey and say, well, you know, we'll let you know what's going to happen, but then they never do. It's like, just tell the truth, and that's how you can probably mitigate a lot of the negativity about, like, your product.
Well, that's, like for me with that, you know, like, on the movie side, the game side, whatever, like, I wish they would be just more transparent. I feel like they've gotten, a little bit better, but, you know, but not near as much. Like, you know, we've gotten our movie announcements over the past few months, we've gotten different things, but I just wish, you know, there was, like, more transparency, because, like, you know, when Marvel has had issues before, for example, and they're under the same, like, Disney umbrella, like, you have, like, Kevin Feige, or you have, like, you know, someone from the Marvel Studios side of things just be like, yo, like, this isn't happening because of XYZ, whatever, like, usually, you know, and they just, or you know, they release it through the trades. And, like, with Star Wars, like, their strategy is basically, like, let's just stop talking about it and maybe people will forget about it. So, you know, that's one thing with me I wish they would kind of tweak their strategy on. So, like, we have that. And then also I was going to put in there before, like, we go on to the next subject at all. Like, since you were off camera, Chris, what are your, like, initial thoughts on the Mandalorian game getting canceled? And then, you know, they're basically just focusing on, like, the Fallen Order franchise by the sounds of it. Like, you know, like I was saying to Milton when you were gone, it's like, it's great they're focusing on the Fallen Order game because it's a very successful franchise. But, like, on the flip side, it's like you were saying, Milton, there's one more game left in the pipeline. So why not just start to expand onto the next thing? So, like, you know, what are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Oh, man, I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts because while it might seem like this is a Star Wars only thing, every other day we are getting reports of literally hundreds of employees getting fired for no reason from game companies. And it's sickening. It's absolutely sickening what is happening out there. The day before EA let off people, Sony let off 900 people, including people from one of the best acclaimed studios on the planet, Insomniac Games, maker of Spider-Man, Ratchet and Clank, who had just put out Spider-Man 2 and just amazing sales, everything on that, and they let them go. Xbox also let off 1,900 employees, canceling a Blizzard game. This is not just, I hate to say, it's not just Star Wars. This is everywhere. This is a, endemic of just the gaming industry has hit a wall. And what's happening is because of the production cost of what these games are, to cite exactly what is happening, Spider-Man 2 costed $300 million to make, and the margin for profit was very, very little. By the time they made the sales, it was just enough to make them a profit, but it wasn't nearly enough to be like, this is a roaring success, versus what they did for Miles Morales, which was a larger margin for profit. And what it is, it's like, why are these games costing $300 million to make? Like, what is going on? Yeah, they get these little mechanics that are really cool, the 4K, 60 frames per second, but does that really matter? So we're seeing tons of stuff shifting in the gaming industry right now, and we're seeing these executives costing people their livelihood and their jobs by cutting jobs to get their stakeholders, their shareholders happy. The shareholders are not happy, so it's like, okay, we can't sustain it. It's basically the AAA market, the AAA games, the higher echelon of games out there. It's not sustainable for what the cost is to make them. So what we're seeing is we're seeing a downsizing of these studios, and they're left with people that have to still work on this stuff, and it's like a smaller population. And that's kind of what happened with this Star Wars game. And to kind of preempt you guys on what exactly happened to Star Wars game. Okay, we never actually had an official announcement that this was a Mandalorian game, but we knew that this game officially was working. It was in the works because a long time ago, I forget what year it was, Respawn, probably off the success of Fallen Order, said, okay, we have started development on the next Jedi game. We've also opened up a section of Respawn Studios to work on this FPS that is helmed by the guy that did the original Battlefront games back in the early 2000s. And we have a strategy game. So they've just axed the single player game, and that's the Mandalorian narrative game. And it's crazy to me because it's so hypocritical from EA, because they're saying in their report to their shareholders or whoever it was, the earnings report, that it's not profitable for them to do like these IPs, to work with IPs with the licensing rights, and then put out a narrative game where it's not going to make them as much money as like a games as a service, live service game, where it's like they're bringing in microtransactions and all that stuff. So they basically said, oh, well, this Star Wars game probably won't make us money because it's not a live service game. So we should just kill it now because it's just going to cost us more money. But then you look over to the other side and they have an Iron Man game in development that's still happening. And they have a freaking Black Panther game that's still in development, that's still being worked on. And they go over here and they say the Star Wars fans can't get their Star Wars game because we think it's not going to work. It's like, how hypocritical are these freaking executives? I'm sorry. It's absolutely ridiculous. And something needs to happen. Something needs to change because the
I think
fans are already pissed off as it is with all these other Star Wars games that EA has canceled. And now there's no freaking leg for them to stand on to say, oh, we're sorry, we couldn't actually make this work. I have a quote that I pulled up from something in this VentureBeat article. This is from an EA person. It's always hard to walk away from a project, and this decision is not a reflection of the team's talent, tenacity, or passion they have for the game, said Mills. Note, giving fans the next installment of the iconic franchises they want is the definition of blockbuster storytelling, the right place to focus. This is absolutely bogus, and I can't believe that I have to sit here and try to believe that these guys are trying to feed us this utter BS. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, that's my two cents on this.
Now, listen, I totally agree. Here's why. Because you made a comment about how these executives are saying, oh, it's not profitable to be with these IPs and blah, blah, blah. I disagree. Because look what's coming out this summer. And this is a non-Star Wars related game. You got NCAA coming out this summer. That's a whole entire IP of itself. Yep. And that's individual IPs because of the NIL, which is name, image, likeness. Okay? Me and my other buddies who are huge college football fans and love that game, we all know it's going to make billions of dollars because this is the first game in 10 years that they've going to make. And for them to, they're paying the players like $600 a piece who signed into it. Mm-hmm. It's $600 a piece plus a copy of the game. And we laughed at that. And my one friend's like, why is that funny? I said, because they should be asking for more because the game's going to make a lot of money. So don't tell me to these executives that the game's not profitable. All these games are profitable. Now, obviously, you have your misses. Let's be real here. You're telling me Star Wars is a miss IP? Spider-Man's a miss IP? I mean, Batman's a miss IP? Look at those particular IPs. No wonder they're so closely guarded because they're worth billions of dollars. That's why they're not giving up the rights half the time. Because they're very profitable. So, I don't want to hear these executives say, "Oh, we got to fire people and cut down," which affects the actual finished product because we can't pay people. I don't truly believe that. Now, I'm sure in business there are some dips. Let's be real here. If you don't believe that, you're naive. But to say that these games aren't profitable, come on. What do you think? This particular generation is all about gaming. Half the kids in our generation sit behind a computer or a keyboard or a system and play games all day. So don't tell me it ain't profitable. Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, like, go on.
Yeah, that's like trying to say streaming ain't profitable. Come on, dog. Everybody streams everything.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, like your example with college football, at minimum, like, they're already projecting it to make, at minimum, what half of Madden usually makes every year. Mind you, Madden, you know, say what you want about it every year, it's always like number one or number two, number three top selling game, money wise. So like college football already being projected to make at minimum like 50% of what Madden makes, that's just baseline what they're saying right now, which is huge. And it's like, it's because it's a good IP. And then like with the stuff with you know, Star Wars, it's like I don't know, I just look at Star Wars, you know, whether it be the gaming side or the movie side, it's like these companies, studios, etc., they have like the golden cash cow sitting right here in front of them, and they're like, nah, let's just like try to make money the most difficult way possible versus not doing it. And like, you know, like you mentioned even before, Chris, with like EA, like you know, in the gaming industry as a whole, like for example, in the Madden umbrella, like in the Madden side of things, they basically cut down virtually every call center. So if you need like contact EA help, it's just a robot basically. Yeah. And the only way to contact EA basically now is, you know, for Madden accounts, you know, it's just random users. Random users get a hotline. It's called like Madden VIP. And like I got it randomly on my account, and you know, it's not for like how much you spend, it's literally just random users, and they call you once a month. And when I talked to the rep, she literally said, you know, this is the only you know, voice call capability like EA is offering now is this Madden VIP program, because they pretty much eliminated their call center. So like, you know, they're doing it on that side of things. They're doing it on, you know, like you mentioned, the development side of things. And it's like I just wonder, like you mentioned, how are these like things so cost heavy where it's like $300 million for a game? Like when movies, you know, movies on average are like $150 million. It's just,
crazy. You're telling me that these games are costing the budget of like the Avengers Endgame and you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, get out of here with that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's really interesting what's happening actually, because there's been a huge shift in the interest of players and the types of studios that are making games, because you look over what's happening with these double A games. See, these are like B tier games, right? I would put them as B tier games. There is a game that's blowing up on PlayStation and PC called Helldivers 2. I think it hit like 500,000 concurrent users on Steam alone. And it was just, and it's because it was a $40 game. It was a smaller game that people are having a great time with that is not like this epic, like 300-hour, like single player game. It's a simple game where you jump on with co-op and it's live service. Yeah, it's an online game and you're doing stuff, but it's like, and then you also have another game called Pow World that was like over a million people playing. Again, another double A, like a B tier type of game for $40. It was on Game Pass. Yep. So that's what's happening is like people don't want to pay these ridiculous like $70 games that are just bloated and filled with a bunch of crap that feels repetitive. But then you have these smaller studios that are actually breaking out of the norm for a smaller price, and people are like, yeah, let's have fun, let's play these games. And that's what's happening is like you look at the AAA, dude, like I bought Suicide Squad, the game the other day had 300 people playing it in Steam, not 300,000, not 30,000, 300 people around the globe are playing that game. People are fed up with this mediocre approach to game development. Overcost, another game, Skull and Bones from Ubisoft. It looks pretty cool, but like again, people are like, I think that the community themselves, these types of games are just smartening up, and that's what's happening is like these companies are losing so much money on these big ass games that no one wants to play because they're playing all these smaller games, you know. So it's a very interesting way how things are going right now.
Right. And listen, I think you make a great point about the simplicity of some of these games. Simple is always better, you know, like, or I wouldn't say that always. I would say simple, nothing wrong with simple, nothing wrong with, you know, being bland or vanilla, you know. Think about how, you know, I'm gonna use a sports analogy. Bill Belichick, he coached Patriots for 20 plus years. Very simple guy. Do your job. He did his job and won 6 Super Bowls. Okay, these companies, if they do their jobs, keep to the fundamentals of gaming, which is story play, which is gameplay, which is, you know, configuration that's appropriate for the gamer. Nothing that's super convoluted, and don't be extra in like your pricing. You keep clientele, you keep customers. I mean, like, if it's replayability, you're gonna have us come back. And it's like it's like these simple rules that they forget to follow that are basic, that it's like, if you follow these rules, gamers will want to spend their money on your games.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I have a real world example of that. So it's funny how you bring that up, Chris, about like the price range, the $30 to $40 range. So I have a cousin who, mind you, you know, I entered the conversation I didn't set the conversation, so it's not like it was like already in his head. He brought it up to me randomly about the Battlefront re-release. He said, he texted me and was like, man, he's like, did you see they're re-releasing Star Wars Battlefront for only $30? And he's like, that's so much nicer than like the new like Halo releases or Madden releases or whatever releases, because all those releases, you know, at minimum you're spending, if you want to get the deluxe full edition, you're spending $100 versus, you know, and he said $30 is way easier to drop on a game than $100 all at once. And it's like, and I texted him back and was like, I'm going to use that example on the podcast when we talk about the games, because that's 100% it is. Like, $30 is way easier to swing than $100.
Oh, yeah. I think it's as good a time as any in this conversation to transition to something positive with games, because I got a chance to play a remaster that came out this week, and that is Star Wars Dark Forces Remastered. Night Dive Studios are a small studio, a small team that is... Their job, what they do is they just remaster old FPS, like they've done Quake 2, which people are really happy with. And I'm proud to say that I played and I completed the game. And this is how you do a remaster, guys. Again, $30 for this remaster, filled with content, including a deleted level, or not even a deleted level. Like, this is so funny. This one level, it's on the Avenger. Which is Vader's ship, but it's like, as you go to play this level, it gives you a rundown of why they never included it in the original game, because they're like, oh, back in 1995, Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, the CES still going on, they're like, we thought this level would be too challenging to demo, so we just scratched this level, and then we used part the original developer, which is LucasArts, cut up sections of this level and used those mechanics, platforming and different things, in other levels in the game. But I am so happy that this game exists, because I actually played the original Dark Forces, which you can still download that original version on Steam. And it is, to explain it, it is basically Doom slash Wolfenstein back from the early 90s, right? It's that like hallway type of run and gun, very kind of just like you in the original game, you couldn't even aim up. Like you couldn't aim up. Like if there was a stormtrooper like up on a ledge, you would fire straight, and then the blaster bolt would just travel magically up and hit them, you know? But they have gone through and they have completely revamped the entire shooting interface. So now you actually can aim up. The FPS is buttery smooth. There's a shift button you could hit that makes your guy run. I already can tell you there's going to be a ton of speed runs of this game. This is exactly what you want from a remaster, because it's not remaking the game. It's not like completely making the game from the ground up. It is putting different like higher res textures on these models. It is cleaning up the audio. It is cleaning up the cutscenes, and it's just a great job for game preservation, which is something that we talk about, right? I went back and played this game a couple of years ago, and for me, it was unplayable. Like, as somebody that plays all the modern stuff, it felt so aged and so dated that I was like, nah, even for the story, I really can't find myself playing. And now that they updated the game, I'm like, yes, I'm totally playing this game. And for me, like, this game pioneered so much stuff back in 1995. It is unbelievable how much stuff that LucasArts did back then with pushing the genre of FPS, which was in its infancy, forward. They have so much variety in the levels, right? The biomes, like you go to an ice planet, you go to freaking Nar Shaddaa, you go to Coruscant, you're on a Star Destroyer, you're in the mines, you're literally every biome, every type of atmosphere is in the game. They have stuff where it's like you slide on ice. They have platforming where you're jumping around. You feel like you're in Attack of the Clones. You're on conveyor belts, and there's stuff going up and down in this factory. You're fighting dark troopers. You're fighting so much different kind of enemy types. It is plentiful. You're not just fighting the same things, the same stormtrooper. You're fighting officers. You're fighting just like, at one point, I'm fighting Boba Fett on Nar Shaddaa. I'm like, this game is a Legends EU Fanatics dream, because there's so much cool stuff. At one point, I went to Fest, which has to be where they brought it from in Andor, because that's Andor's birthplace, right? So it was really cool to play through this game with that lens of like the deep lore cuts and everything that might have gotten pulled through. Because for like Coruscant, for instance, it's like you got to put yourself back in 1995, right? This game came out before Shadows of the Empire. It came out before The Phantom Menace. It came out before even the special editions. This might have been our first look at Coruscant. And it's not much to look at in this game, if I'm being honest, because it's literally just a bunch of like low polygon like towers that don't even really look like buildings. But it's just, this game is a damn gem. And for me, I was just having a great time. Milton, there's it gave me those old SNES like Star Wars side scrolling vibes, because the music is all MIDI based, so it's like that, you know, electronica, like Imperial March and every Star Wars thing, just like, you know, electronicized or whatever. It's just absolutely fantastic. So I really recommend it for anybody that even has a vague idea and a vague curiosity in this game. I would say it's only $30, which is nice, and they have a bunch of cool concept art, like pages. I haven't gotten through it. I want to do it actually probably this week, of like their whole design process of like rotoscoping Kyle Katarn, like the different animation and stuff. And like, though I've never seen a game really go in this depth with the generosity of documenting like the whole game making process of the whole thing. So yeah, Night Dive Studios, these guys absolutely killed it. And it's really cool to know that, you know, in a couple more weeks, we're going to have another remaster I'll be playing through. So, pretty good stuff.
That sounds pretty hype, dude.
Oh, yeah. Like, that game, I mean, you were excited about it. I've seen so many people, like, talking about it online and stuff, and I'm definitely gonna play through it here soon enough, just because of all the like hype around it. And you know, I haven't played it in years, like, you know, since probably late 90s, early 2000s was the last time I touched that game. So, you know, I'm definitely gonna check it out. Should be a good time. And you know, a little fun fact for people who you know, don't know like the whole history of that game. Also a little, with Kyle Katarn, you know, that was originally supposed to be Luke actually in that game.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. If you didn't know that either, Chris. So basically,
that might be in a concept thing. I got to read it. So.
Yep. Yeah. So it was originally supposed to be Luke, and basically the reason they changed it over to Kyle Katarn was because they just didn't want to have to like only stick to like the Jedi stuff basically versus, you know, having a shoot 'em up game plus like some Jedi stuff as well. So like it's you know, that's pretty much the reason why. Like they just didn't want to be only just, you know, caged into just being a Jedi pretty much for the whole game. So that was a cool little thing I'd read about that. Like, you know, the hype of this release, I've seen, you know, different articles talking about like the history of the game, and I read that and I was like, dang, that's really cool, you know, to hear that, because like, you know, we didn't know that back in the day when that game got released. So you know, that was a cool little thing. You know, it's just nice like getting those type of little fun facts. And like you mentioned, here in 2 weeks, I mean less than 2 weeks now, we'll be playing through the Battlefront remake or remaster.
Yeah, what day does that come out?
March 14th. It's that Thursday, whatever that Thursday is. I think it's the 14th.
Gosh, it's literally like next week.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we're that close. I cannot wait to play through the Rise of the Empire campaign on Battlefront 2, because it is amazing.
Is there a campaign in the first game?
Yep, the first game is really fun too, because that game basically takes you through. I mean, it's the bad guy side of things again. So, like, you know, it's not just Rise of the Empire with the clones. You actually start, because I played through the Battlefront 1 campaign back around Christmas time. And, you know, that campaign, you start as the droids invading Naboo, and you go in. Yeah, like the very first mission, you're going to the Gungan swamps and, like, wiping out the Gungans, and then you move to Theed, and you have to battle, like, all the, like, the Theed Royal Guards, like, the Naboo Guards. You battle all those guys, and, like, you play on that side. It's so much fun. Like, the Battlefront 1 game is a blast, too, just because, like, when you have it on hard difficulty, so, like, in the second game, you can kill the heroes. Like when Darth Maul shows up for the Separatists, you can kill them. But in the original game, you actually can't kill the heroes or villains from the enemy side. Like, you can just be blasting at Count Dooku, and he's just, like, deflecting blaster shots fast as humanly possible. And the only way to actually take out, you know, the heroes for the other team in the original game is you literally have to just run them over with, like, a TIE fighter or something. So, like, you know, that original game's a lot of fun, too. So, you know, we'll be looking forward to playing that here in 2 weeks. And also, for, you know, anybody who's wanting to like get into that game, like, hey, you'll be able to maybe like run into me or Chris playing it online.
Yeah,
because it is online.
I'm really hoping, because they put achievements in Dark Forces. I really hope they have Xbox achievements in the Battlefront collection, because
I'm so excited.
I want to tout that I got some achievements to my friends and playing the OG Battlefront. So that'd be really freaking cool.
Well, I think they have it built in though already, Chris, because. Oh. Gosh, here we go on a side tangent about gaming, but hey, here we are. But they actually have it built in already, because if you remember on the original Battlefront 2, I bet you the achievements are going to be your class rankings, because, like, you know, you can go through and upgrade, like, you can upgrade literally every single gun for every single class. Like, you know, upgrade the blaster rifle and the pistol for, like, the normal clone. But the only way you can do that is, like, you have to get 10 kills, 20 kills, 30 kills, whatever, and you can upgrade your blaster from normal to like general. You can do that on every single class for every single weapon.
Wow.
And then the cool thing is, based on like your kills and how many blasters you have leveled up, you actually increase your overall ranking. So like, for example, when we are going into battle, you know, you start out as like a normal normal ranked officer where you can only have like one clone trooper follow you. But as you level up, you can level clear up to general where you can have four clone troopers following you. So it's like, you know, you're like a squad, like Republic Commando type thing. So you have that. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll have like a whole huge segment on it when it comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Here in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. We get ready for that. Another thing. Oh, man. This is going to be a long episode. I'll try to keep this short, at least for this part. For my week in Star Wars, I went to a big pre-release of a new Star Wars, the card trading game, TCG for short. And yeah, so I had a lot of fun. I mean, I just wanted to get a couple cards here. So, you know, really awesome designs by Fantasy Flight Games. Just a lot of really cool different designs, right? This is basically like Magic the Gathering Star Wars, if you will. A lot of really just awesome stuff. But basically, they had the pre-release over at my local gaming store, the War Gamers Guild in Yardville, New Jersey. And it was really neat because a lot of those guys, myself included, are not really card gamers. But, you know, I've been following the release of this, and it's just seems like it's really cool because they include characters literally from like every movie. Now, this first set is called Spark of the Rebellion, and it does include a lot of stuff from Rogue One, from Rebels, from the original trilogy. So yeah, it was just a really fun night. We opened up six booster packs of cards. Oh, I really love this one. It's the Shore Trooper here. Really cool. They have like, you know, shiny cards, just like Pokemon, right? You can get your collector cards and different things. But yeah, you have your leaders, you fight with them, you have to destroy the other person's base. So yeah, I've had a really, really good time. I just was looking at these cards just for way too much time, right? It's just like, oh my gosh, like I'm getting sucked in because it's like you have so many cool different kind of characters. I love their attention to detail with like the alien species like Solistins and Quarren Marines, and you know, just a lot of just fun stuff. Oh yeah, like there's a foil right there. Which one is this? Oh yeah, there's a Mimban Trooper. That's what it was. Mud Trooper. Look at that. Haven't seen one of those guys since Solo Star Wars Story. So yeah, all in all, really, really happy with where this game is right now. A lot of fun to play, which is the most important things. This stuff could look as cool as it does, but if the gameplay sucks, then it's not going to have longevity. So I will, you know, sporadically check in with everybody on the podcast of how I'm playing. But the actual full release comes out this week. You get a two-player starter set. With Vader leader, with Luke leader. Looking forward to that. I have some content already on the channel of me opening up three booster packs. I think I got the Bendu from one of them, so that was really neat. General Veer, stuff like that. But yeah, had a great time. I'll be going there on Friday nights for the foreseeable future to see how long you know, the computer wants to play. I'll be there playing with them. So.
Nice. Yeah, I checked out your video on it. It's cool that you know, Star Wars is getting like back into that, you know, having like trading cards again and all of that sort of thing, because like, you know, that reminds me back in the day of like when we had, you know, there were Star Wars trading cards for like, you know, the Legends stuff, like, you know, famously, like, oh yeah, there was like for a lot of them, like for, you know, you had like the Heir to the Empire trilogy, like all those characters were in trading card form. Wow. Like you had Mara Jade, like that's how you know, Mara Jade, you know, famously got famous because she wasn't, you know, advertised like on the books or anything, like as in photos. She got famous through like the trading cards back then, and you know, that's how her character took off. And like, you know, you have plenty of other ones. You know, for our Legends fans out there, if you look up the picture of Talon Card. Oh, actually, yeah. He was modeled after Timothy Zahn, actually. So just a fun little fact there, for anybody looking into some old trading card stuff for Star Wars. But yeah, there was there were Star Wars trading cards around some of those old Legends material like that back in the day. So it's just cool kind of seeing that like revamp after potentially like 25 years of not having it.
Oh yeah, I mean, Fantasy Flight Games. They're notorious for having kind of a bad reputation. I wouldn't say bad reputation, but a hit and miss reputation with the games, because they had Star Wars Destiny, which utilized dice, and it was a cool concept, but there was a lot of people said it had too much randomness in the game, because it was like, well, if you roll this dice really good, no matter what strategy the other person have, if you just rolled really good, you would just beat them instantly or something ridiculous like that. And then people found that out, were like, nah, that's not good gameplay. And then it was a pain in the ass for them to mass manufacture the dice that were custom with character logos. It just was not a good production pipeline to get them out as fast as they could. So I think there was issues with the manufacturing. So that game was the previous game that came out before this. So there's a little bit of trepidation, I would say, in the community of like, oh, how much do we want to buy into something like this? Is it going to be another gimmick? Is it going to be another thing where we buy and spend maybe $500 with on these trading cards, and then we're just having them collect dust? So, the jury's still out, but I will say from what I've experienced so far, I would strongly recommend what I've played so far. Definitely jump in, but I'm very much looking forward to see the future, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, how strong the community is with this game. And I think it really has a lot to show that's new and unique versus other trading card games out there. So, like I said, I'll be keeping you guys in a loop from time to time with my experiences with this game and with other remasters and everything. We talked a lot about gaming today, which is really fun. My sweet spot in Star Wars, but we are going to make a hard right turn. We're going to pull this truck over and talk about Star Wars The Bad Batch because, as the title suggests, every week we're breaking down, reviewing, discussing, analyzing the latest episode of Star Wars The Bad Batch. And tonight we are talking about episode 4 of season 3. It's called A Different Approach. In this episode, we get a crashed. One of those classic episodes where the vehicle crashes. You have these two characters that have to kind of work together to get out of this dangerous situation. It's what we have here. We have Crosshair, we have Omega, and we have Batcher, her new little companion, going around trying to find a way to get out of there in one piece. And of course, as you would expect with any Star Wars story, it's not as easy as they would hopefully like it to be. Milton, I'll throw this over to you. What are your first thoughts on this episode?
Actually really liked this episode. I really enjoyed it. I didn't think I would, but I think what I said last week was I really liked all the Omega stuff in the season thus far, and I think I shouldn't be surprised that I liked this episode. You got to see more of her character development. You get to see the skills that she's learned and how she's putting them at place, and honestly, you're getting to see how confident she is as a character thus far, which is surprising, but then it shouldn't be. Because she's aged up a little bit. I know it's been what, I'll say about 6 months since the
Yeah,
last season.
they gave us an exact number, actually, real
What was it?
quick. I think it was 111 days. Now, the only reason why I'm saying that is because you could go over to every Thursday, StarWars.com uploads the episode guides, and if you go through like the gallery trivia things, they'll give you exact like information. And there's like a couple other fun things that
Oh.
I'll mention as we get further along in this analysis. But yeah, go ahead.
Gotcha. So about 4 months has passed since the last season. And even in that 4 months, you can see the maturity in that particular character, and you're seeing how she knows how to play the game. Excuse me. She knows how to play the game too, in the sense of, conning that admiral, and also conning that other guy to get the money. So I love the back and forth that she and Crosshair had this episode. Crosshair was like, listen, we got to take care of ourselves. Don't focus on the other BS. Obviously, Omega, true to her character, she wants to help people, she wants to do the right thing. One thing I did get annoyed with this episode was that whenever they did crash, she's like, well, we have to make sure we track something so we go back and get them. And he's like, what are you talking about? We're not going back. Like, and I'm thinking, yeah, why would you want to go back to Omega? Like, you hated it there. And it's like I thought that was kind of a stupid thing to put in it. But again, that's consistent to her character. That's the only thing I didn't like about what she said this episode. But other than that, though, I really enjoyed this episode. And the one thing that stood out to me was the visuals and the realism of this episode, like the bre seeing them breathe,
Yes,
a
I was
little
going to say
like
that.
how
Yes.
cold it was. Like,
Yep.
that stood out to me this episode, and that never really stood out to me before, except for this one. I don't know why, but I think they made a point to really push like the atmosphere and the visuals and the CGI. They're a character themselves. So I
Exactly.
really enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, and actually did get a name on that episode thanks to Oh no, I just lost it. Oh yeah, here we go. The new it's a new planet they crashed on. It's called Lal. That is the new planet, by the way. But yeah, that great attention to detail in animation. Again, this is how we kind of sometimes myself forget that I'm watching animation. I'm like, this is just a really good episode of TV in general, right? It's just kind of pushing through the boundaries of making it more believable, again, more realistic. Ben, what are your first thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, my first thought was what I ended the podcast off last week talking about was, all right, I said, guys, we need to go at least 1-1 in our sports analogies, 1-1 the next 2 weeks, basically. And hey, we got to win this week. This episode was really good. It was, the story was nice for it. It was nice just seeing the visuals, as you mentioned, Milton. The breathing, that was like a big surprise. Like, that was like a nice step in animation I was not expecting to see, but it was a nice surprise. And then just seeing, just the overall, like, pushing forward of characters, whether it be Crosshair, whether, Crosshair, obviously he's trending, he's on the good side, but he's, really getting more into the fight of the good guys. And then even Omega's character learning, hey, like, this is like war, we can't just do this the easy way. Like, she tried to pretty much do the whole Batman, hey, no killing thing, and then eventually had to like just let Crosshair like do his thing. So it's just nice seeing both of the characters really grow as a whole. And yeah, I was really happy with this episode.
Oh yeah, this is something I'll agree with both of you guys on, is this is the right direction for this series. I, like the rest of us, we're skeptical. Okay, we got a single episode this week. Sometimes the single episodes aren't on the same quality bar, I guess we could say, as the 2 or 3 episodes in 1 week kind of like arcs that they give us sometimes. But yeah, I mean, there's no slowing down. What I like is that we're getting the story moving. We're not stagnating. We're not just spinning the wheels for a week here. There is a lot of resolution. I was surprised to see how we get to see the reuniting, the reunion, if you will, between the Bad Batch characters all together, including that really kind of awkward showing with Crosshair and Wrecker and Hunter. But along the way, it's not just moving the plot forward. You're moving characters forward. You're seeing a different approach, as its title is that relationship between Crosshair and Omega, which we haven't really seen a lot before the season, but it's neat to see that she's kind of rubbing off on him, and he's kind of just like, oh, what the hell? I'll give you a shot at figuring this out. Again, the visuals were amazing. Just
Well,
attention to detail was really, really good.
if I can hop in there just real quick, Chris, like you mentioned, I forgot to mention that when I was talking about Crosshair. Like, so her rubbing off on Crosshair, for example, like in prior seasons, if Batcher would have gotten kidnapped or dog napped or whatever, creature napped, Crosshair wouldn't have cared. But now, like, he's just like, all right, I'll like go along with it and help save your pet. So, like, it's cool just seeing his character kind of like transition back to being a good guy again, because his character is one of the stronger. I mean, I would say arguably he's the most intriguing of the Bad Batch, not Omega, like of the original, like the Bad Batch, like dudes. Like, I think he's the most intriguing. So it's just cool seeing him like, go back toward the good guy side of things.
Oh yeah, so we got that, but we can get into more of a free flow discussion at this point. One thing that stood out to me was something really, really cool, and that's like the character design. Seeing this planet, really getting the world building down, the team, Jessica Corbett, Brad Rao, and the rest of them, just doing an amazing job with giving us a first look at this location and the idea of the P Imperial presence there. I loved seeing those TK troopers with the cloaks that added so much character to it, right? You have a TK character with a cloak. You have TK character with these goggles, which is kind of hilarious because like, why would they need goggles? They have lenses in their helmets anyway, but it's still a little bit more character that I'm like, ah, they went for it. This feels new. It feels different. And just sticking on the Imperial side for a moment, I loved seeing the corruption. These people just taking bribes, this character, which, by the way, this character here, let me try to get his name. I don't know what the officer's actual character name was. I can find it in the meantime. But apparently his actor plays Viserys in season one of Game of Thrones, the older brother of Daenerys that gets, sorry for spoiler, the one that gets melted by gold. So, yeah, I did some deep digging on that. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the voice actor that played that character. So, really, really loved it. And the character's name is Lieutenant Man. Lieutenant Man is the character. But yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts on the Imperial presence? I don't know if it stood out to you guys as much as it did with me.
Oh, I thought it was well done. I mean, it's kind of like that. It kind of reminded me of like that old style, like 1930s, 1940s gangster who's all about the people, but low key he's grimy and a scum of the earth. You know, everything's taxable. Oh yeah, you took the money from me. However, there is a pet tax, or hey, there is a shuttle tax. I mean, it's some bullshit, and he knows how to manipulate the system because it's his way. So when he did that, I just was like, okay, I'm not surprised, because he was very much like low key okay to lose, but he's like, well, you know, there's a tax for X, Y, and Z, so he got his money back by taking their dog, and also saying there's a tax to even have a shuttle or whatever it was. It's like, come on, like you're Al Capone, but you're not like popular like that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was well done. I thought it was typical. It was typical because the planet itself isn't the most sophisticated planets. You're not going to have the most sophisticated people in power. You're going to have the people that manipulate things for themselves.
Oh yeah, I completely agree with you there, Milton. Like, it's cool just seeing like his character be that sort of Imperial, because, you know, it just kind of reminds you, it shows you, you know, how so many of the Imperials are over the years. I mean, heck, even like, you know, famously, go back to Darth Vader and Lando, you know, Lando like questions him and Vader's like, all right, I'm changing the deal. Like this whole thing, like, you know, even Vader was doing that sort of stuff. So like, you know, it's cool just seeing that attitude stay consistent with the Empire, you know, over all the years, like we've seen it in OT, we saw it in Legends, we saw it in current canon. You know, it's cool just seeing it continue, you know, all these years later, basically, into even just an animated show like The Bad Batch.
Yeah, and one other thing, too, is that we're used to seeing the Imperials portrayed, and I'm just talking movies, portrayed in the manner of having somewhat some honor, some gentleman-like attitude. But what the TV shows and what the series do animation-wise, they do a really good job at really diving into the minutiae of the grittiness of, there's not a lot of good people in the Empire. They're actually low-key or a-holes. You know, like some of these guys have no honor. They have no code. They're very much greedy and like to take advantage of the opportunity, because they are still part of that cog. And probably a lot of these guys fought in the Clone War and transitioned over from the Old Republic to the new Empire, so they have to figure out a way to make it work for themselves too.
Oh yeah, Milton, you mentioned about Omega and about how she has grown as a character, become more intelligent, become more. I like how scrappy she was in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's two different occasions. Like the first part where she's like, "Don't worry, Crosshair." Like he wanted to kill everybody. Obviously, it's like, that might not work in this situation. We'll probably get killed ourselves. Let me try talking to this person to get our way onto the shuttle. And she's trying to make this deal, and it's like that really rubbed off. As like, yeah, this is a tactic that, you know, the Bad Batchers, Hunter and Wrecker, maybe have tried to convince somebody. So I like to see her kind of initiative with, okay, let me take this. Let me try this way. And then the idea that she's playing this game, right? We see her playing games against, I think it was Cid last season or the first season. So really seeing her kind of come into her own. And a really interesting thing that popped up on this episode guide is, for this game, it is not Sabacc, it is not Pizzak, but the people at Lucasfilm Animation created a brand new game, card game, just for this episode called Balana, B-A-L-A-A-N-A. And apparently they have, they literally, speaking of card games I was talking about earlier, bringing it full circle, here we go. See, that's how it all ties in, guys. They made a actual rules for this card game. And they made like all these mechanics that have never been done. It's a brand new Star Wars card game. And they even had like an extended sequence of this happening, and they ended up having to cut like most of it out of the episode because it was just going to be too long. But I just love the enthusiasm that the people over at Lucasfilm were just like, ah, what the hell? Let's just spend our spare time on making this card game. If it doesn't get into the episode, oh well. But at least we know it exists now. So I love, again, attention to detail. I keep harking on that because Star Wars animation does that probably better than most other things out there in animation realm, really pushing things forward. So I thought that was a really cool detail. And it added a lot of drama. I like that whole sequence itself. Really felt like Solo, a Star Wars story with Han and Lando there in that gambling den. It kind of got me the same vibes there.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I agree. It did kind of feel like Solo. It was cool just seeing, like, Omega, you know, Omega being in action. Because for so much of her character, it's like, you know, we've seen her, whether it be, like, just, like, you know, chilling on Kamino or chilling in Tantus. Or, you know, it's like she's kind of like the damsel in distress type character where it's like, oh, we got to rescue Omega. We got to rescue Omega. We got to rescue Omega. And now it's like, oh, she's actually, you know, she's a Bad Batch member now. Like, she's actually involved with the mission. Well, you know, obviously her mission right now is just escaping, but like she's actually being involved because, you know, if this was like a season one episode, for example, like Crosshair would be doing all the work and Omega probably would have been captured by, you know, this Imperial. So like, it's just cool seeing her character actually getting, you know, the kind of like the shine it deserves after all of these years of development.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Talking about a fun reference that I caught, as a huge Jurassic Park fan, I've been really eating well with this season of Bad Batch, because I don't know if I mentioned this on the premiere episode of season 3, but that opening sequence when the person crashes in that jungle, I don't know why, it just gave me Jurassic Park vibes. And just with the like the mystery of the people getting picked off, it's like, oh man, what kind of creatures are out there getting these guys? Kept hearing allusions to, oh, the bad creatures out there. And eventually we've seen what that thing was, a bear creature. But getting back to this episode, we got a much more blatant reference to one of my favorite films of all time. And that was towards the end of the episode when their tactic was, oh, let's cause a distraction, which was a brilliant idea, by releasing all these different creatures. And it was really funny because a couple of them even looked like the Gallimimus from Jurassic Park. And they have these handlers with these electro staff things, like shocking these creatures as they're in the cages, which is literally what was happening in the first scene of Jurassic Park with the Velociraptor on Isla Nublar. And then at one point, Lieutenant Man gets like, I'm guessing that might have been a Rathtar, with the big, you know, tentacle arm comes out and brings him into the cage and kills him. I was like, yeah, if this isn't a reference to Jurassic Park, I don't know what is. So just to something I wanted to point out there is like, yeah, I really appreciated that.
Oh yeah. With me being I'm a huge Jurassic fan as well. And it's really cool seeing them incorporate Jurassic references, obviously because of like, you know, the ties to Star Wars and like the Lucasfilm franchise, of course. So like, it's just cool just getting to see, you know, to see those little references continue, you know, even to now, really.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Any other things you want to bring up about this episode specifically, guys? Anything I might have missed?
No, I think we're good. I mean, I'll start off by wrapping it up with the scores, if that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, so like, again, it's one of my favorite episodes. I don't think I would actually say that this early on in the season. And the biggest thing you pointed out, Chris, was like that one-on-one, or no, Ben, you said this, the one-on-one filler episode. This was on purpose. Like, this actually had a purpose. And that's been my fear all for the final season, for any season that I'm in at the final season, it's filler episodes. There's no time for it. And I felt this episode served a purpose into obviously showing Omega's character, showing what the hunt is going to look like moving forward, and obviously the reunification of the Bad Batch. I'm hoping next week continues that in the sense of what's now the next step for these guys to somewhat get away from the Empire, but also exact some type of revenge, because you know there's some type of overall arc or plot that they're going to want to avenge and do something to disrupt the Empire's growth. I'm curious to see that. I thought this episode was well done. I thought the visuals were on point. I thought the music was solid. I thought Omega's character stood out to me. I think that was the biggest thing, was her character standing out. And obviously Crosshair's relationship with her and what that looks like moving forward. I could see them really pushing that Crosshair and Omega relationship this final season, just because she did develop something while they were incarcerated together at Tantus. So I'm curious to see that. And obviously I want to see this whole M count thing and what this looks like, because we did get a shot of Namase for a brief episode. And I'm curious to see how they're still going to develop that whole story arc of Project Necromancer. So overall, I thought this was a really solid episode. So I have to score this probably a 9 out of 10.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to mention that as well. Thanks for bringing up the other perspectives. Is the idea that we were getting those cross-reference shots back to what's happening with Hemlock. And there's something, I don't know if you guys, it's pretty obvious. I guess maybe I just picked up on it. He holds his gloved hand a lot. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yes.
It seems like there's some kind of tell, like, okay, what's this mystery thing that is going on with him? Is, I don't know.
Yeah, I honestly thought about that too. I wasn't sure if it was just like one of those typical villain tropes where they're just like, you know, yeah, like they're stroking their beard type thing or their mustache, but maybe he's sick. Maybe he's like, hey, I need to figure out a cure for my ailment, which is why he has the glove on. But I mean, he's a scientist for a reason. Most scientists in these type of shows, there's a reason why they're scientists. Something's usually wrong with them or a loved one. So I could see them tying that into this particular character. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So we got a 9 out of 10. Ben, I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah. I mean, I can agree with all those points. I think the episode overall was really good as a whole. It's one of the best ones of the Bad Batch series, I would say, just because it's, you know, it did its job. It was a good, enjoyable episode. Like there are so many episodes from the Bad Batch's history where it's like, I could just hit skip, 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 skip. And now this one is like, no, nah, this one would randomly play. I wouldn't mind to let it play. It's fine. I do think an interesting thing though, you know, we didn't touch on it a ton in this episode, is that whole Nalase stuff, because, you know, we get the Bad Batch reunited, and I guess in my mind, I was thinking this whole thing was going to get resolved maybe in, like, the 13th episode of the season. Like, I thought they were going to get reunited way later. So now it's just like, okay, where are we going from here? Is it like, you know, are we going to have Hemlock threatening Nalase and sending out a transmission to the Bad Batch, like, bring back Omega? And then they're going to have to figure out a plan to how to rescue Nalase or something, or, you know, something or another. Like, so now, to me, the season's wide open where it could go. So I'm not sure exactly where it could go, which is actually a nice little surprise. Like, it's nice not knowing, because, you know, normally we could kind of like with even seasons of Mando, you know, you can kind of plot point of where things are probably going to go and get close enough to it. So it's nice to have somewhat of a mystery heading forward. But overall with this episode, I agree with Milton. I think it's a solid, it's a real solid 9. It really is.
Yeah. So I gave a 9 to the last episode. I'm going to give this one, I'll be the different person in the group, an 8.5 out of 10. I don't really know why I'm giving it an 8.5. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was great. It had Jurassic Park in it references. So it's like, come on, that's amazing. I guess the thing is, I'm just keeping my scores kind of lower right now because I feel like we're so early on that the episodes might even get better than this. So I'm holding my 10th closely to my chest right now because I feel like we're going to continue to climb and climb and climb. I took a quick look as we were talking about the episode titles, what's coming our way. So next week we have The Return, and then March 13th, you know, in another week or so time, we have another two-parter episode, Infiltration Extraction. So there's a lot to look forward to. The Return, what does that mean? The return of them to, like, their home base, the return of a certain character. there's a lot of things that we can glean from that, you know, staying away from speculation, because we'll be a fool. But we might look like fools a week from now for like, oh, what is this? What is that? You know, we're just going to enjoy the ride and see how it goes. But yeah, overall, really enjoyed the episode. Pushed things forward just like you would want it to. Serialized content over episodic content, which is always something I prefer in my current behavior or likes and whatnot in my current pop culture. I'd rather have those longer form stories being told, impacting every single week, and that's what we're getting here. Omega is getting broadened as a character. Crosshair is definitely seeing a lot of development, a lot of different things going on, and a great cliffhanger that I left on that wants us wanting more. So all in all, we all really enjoyed this episode. Let us know in the comment section down below, what were your score? What was your score for this A Different Approach Season 3 Episode 4 for The Bad Batch? So, with that being said, I'll have you guys do your plugs. Milton, what's going on with you lately?
Yeah. Nothing, man. Literally, right now is like that weird time of the year, March. Really nothing going on vacation-wise or family stuff, but honestly just been spending time with my friends, family as much as I can and working. Still hitting the gym, obviously. But yeah, you guys can find me on Instagram at MiltonWeber7, or I'm sorry, on X at MiltonWeber7, or Instagram at Milton7Weber, where both platforms I like to post funny stuff, memes, anything like that. I like to keep it positive, so if you hit me up, keep it positive, keep it funny.
Well, I'm sure you're looking forward to WrestleMania coming up, right? You got a day count on that. That's you're probably counting down the days at this point, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, me and my buddies, we've already been, we booked our hotels, we're planning out our days when we're up there in Philly, so it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting, so I won't be here during that particular weekend of Bad Bats, but I'll be excited about watching wrestling and enjoying a childhood dream of mine, which is attending a WrestleMania.
Oh, man. When is that again?
April 6th and the 7th.
Oh, okay. So like the week after. Wow. This is like a month away just about.
Yeah. It's like we're leaving. We're going to be in Philadelphia Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and into Monday. So yeah, it's going to be pretty fun.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be amazing. Ben, what about you?
You can just find me on Twitter and Instagram talking Star Wars, talking fitness, and that's about it, really. And just getting excited, or at Real Ben Maynard, and just getting really excited, you know, for the upcoming content. You know, Chris, you mentioning the date of the two-parter. You know, hey, we get two Bad Batch episodes on the 13th, and then Battlefront on the 14th, back to back. So that's going to be like an action-packed week in Star Wars for us. So I'm already counting down the days for that after you mentioned that date. So it's like, here we go. We're going to be having some, you know, some good Star Wars times the next couple weeks.
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. As for me, as I always say, we could always check back over on the Star Wars Underworld every Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern PM time. Me and Matthew Neugebauer go over the latest offerings from Marvel and Dark Horse with the Star Wars comics wrap up. By the way, I forgot to mention, we were so ingrained with our Star Wars talk that we had one comic release this week that was, let me look real quick. Thrawn Alliance is issue number 2. So there you go. You can find me and Matthew talking about that. You can also find me talking about that specifically on this channel. And as I said off the top, you can find me talking about Star Wars Unlimited, opening up packs. I also updated my blog with a preview for Star Wars Unlimited of why it's going to stand the test of time, the things it brings to the table when it comes to diversifying itself from the likes of Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic, Pokemon, Lorcana, and the like. And that is at starraptor.substack.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You could join us live next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's going to do it for Billen. For Ben, for I, Chris, a.k.a. Star Raptor. That's going to do it for us here at Outer Rim Transmission for episode 143. Thanks for watching. May the Force be with you in transmission.